From somewhere, a calm musical note arrives. You balance it on your tongue, a single ripe grape, till your whole body glistens. In the space between breaths, you apply it to any wound, and the wound heals. Soon the nights will lengthen. You will lean into the year, humming like a saw. You will fill the lamps with kerosene, knowing somewhere a line breaks. A city goes black. People dig for candles in the bottom drawer. You will be ready. You will use the song like a match. It will fill your rooms, opening rooms of its own. So you sing, I did not know my house was this large. What do we do with all of these heavy things? How do we break them apart in order to mend? What can be that single ripe grape that we might apply to a wound and the wound heals? A wise teacher once told me that bodies are good to think with. Our bodies can be collaborators in asking, what do we need to show up to life? Unitarian Universalist community at its best, I feel, affirms and fuels what it means to be a body in the world. A world that, as the poet David White writes, was meant to be free in. The world or community of people, one that I work with, is the community of people with chronic conditions. One in which the freedom to belong can mean whether something is accessible or inaccessible, unpleasant or life-threatening, huge or subtle, visible or invisible. I've used a ritual to begin support groups of people with chronic conditions, in which I ask, what does your body need to belong in this space? At a first meeting of a new support group, I asked this question as a way of introducing covenant, the promises we must keep to one another so that the space can be free for people with chronic conditions. That if we did anything right together, it would be figuring out what all of the bodies of the people in the support group needed to show up for 1 hour twice a month. What does your body need to belong in this space? Dottie, a woman who had chronic migraines, said she would feel most welcome if the lights were off during our session. And Alfred, a man who was legally blind, said that he could see materials printed in very large font size, but he needed lights on to feel welcome and safe in the space. I panicked. And I silently vowed never to use this ritual ever again. How, in this new group, and already we were at an impasse, what was worthwhile about asking this if we couldn't satisfy the needs that that arose? Why ask the community to hear from one another and name needs that would inevitably contradict each other? I looked at the faces of the two lay pastoral care leaders who were our co-facilitators and saw the terror in their eyes as well. Oh no, what a setup we made for ourselves. We were curious, we were made vulnerable, and now we had to respond. What could make an us possible? Gloria Anzal Dua, a Chicana feminist spiritual writer and revolutionary who also had diabetes, created a sanctuary called Mundo Sordo, a space for those who needed a space to feel at home. She wrote, the colored, the queer, the poor, the female, the physically challenged, to transcend the norms of what's possible, to recreate a community, to recreate the body in community. Her spiritual vision, she said, was to provide us with no trapdoor solution. We must act in the everyday world, acts that may make us more vulnerable, but that vulnerability can be the source of our power if we use it. Vulnerability could be the source of our power if we use it. The solutions for our own survival may lie in reciprocity, in our connections, in our relationships with our human co-sufferers, or social engagement in a world that cries out for our presence. Vulnerability, source of power. We can grow to take meaningful risks. We can become new and daringly resilient. For me, when my reserves are low, when I've been reading the news on my Facebook feed for too long, when my tears are unyielding, I start to feel the sensory overload, that fight or flight or freeze response. A numbness often in my calf muscles will make it hard for me to imagine or even identify what the next best step is, the next way to reach out, the next action I might take in solidarity, the next piece of my own routine that needs my attention. Have you ever had an interaction in which you feel suddenly anxious and maybe a feeling of tension in your neck or your torso makes itself known to you? Have you ever noticed the sweat build up in your palm when at a meeting or at a session or on a street corner when you know you have to speak up? Where in the body does anxiety or fear live for you? How does grief show up? Doubt. What our bodies need in an instant can be nagging, undiagnosable, intermittent, or a matter of survival. The same can be said of those moments of relief or tremendous joy, our vibration or exhale, or our arms swinging as we walk, or maybe as we swim. Do you have a favorite pillow that, when applied in the right place in your lower back, makes you feel supported like no other inanimate object can? Joy or sadness, fear or exuberance, our experiences register in the body. What if we became curious about those embodied experiences as a matter of spiritual practice? You may have already tried already as we practice together during our time of meditation. If we squeeze a bone, it pushes back, reliable and dense. If we press our feet or hands or anything else to the floor or chair beneath us, we can be reassured, we can be renewed in our reassurance of our stability or what supports us, what holds us. If the body's good to think with, then I hope that the body can be a source of wisdom in Unitarian Universalist community. There may be voices leading us to disagree, to believe that there's nothing else to be curious about, or that to disregard or push the body away because just thinking about that stuff was not expedient, or maybe it's not well-mannered. I think a breakdown in our covenants can take place not because of our inadequacies, but because of our fear. We may try to attend to our own discomfort or fear and or pain and while in community, and we fear that we might be met with indifference or passivity, maybe that indifference from ourselves. We don't navigate the intricacies of what it would mean to include all of us, all of those with whom we wish to be in community. What's the point of making a covenant as congregations if we cut off our curiosity about bodies, I wonder? What could be the point of covenant if we recoil at the onset of any conflict or risk? So a week went by after that first support group meeting. The facilitators and I decided to stay dedicated to the covenant we made in that group. Our commitment that even if in the rest of the world it could not be so, that we would be dedicated to doing right by one another's embodied needs. Those very things made an us possible. In other spaces, we might have been deceived into thinking we were powerless to change the environment for our access and involvement, but not here. Anzaldúa's Mundo Zurdo vision of spirituality called to us. The love we have for our commonly maligned bodies and souls must burgeon out. The lay facilitators reached out to both Dottie and Alfred. The lights would remain off, and in the part of the circle that was far from Dottie, we'd move the reading lamp from the church office to Alfred's side for each session, so that both could get what their bodies needed in that space, in that meeting. That day, we were keeping our promises to be open to each person who was seeking us. We were curious, made vulnerable, and then respond. We were poised for the next time we would each be met with conflict that we might feel in our bones, the fear we might experience in our muscles or nerves, things that would surprise us, things that might intimidate us, break our hearts, restore our hope, fill us with love. And there would be many next times to practice. We asked, we noticed, we responded again, we noticed again. In our being curious about our own bodies, we can refine what it means to do right by our covenants, the defining form of our relationships with one another, that Unitarian Universalism can imbue us with promise, as historian Alice Blair Wesley puts it. At times when the stakes are so very high, we gather regularly and often. Otherwise, the spirit of love is just a bodiless abstraction. From our curiosity with one another, we may know more love. And as we practice, we could create more freedom. Notice, respond, and notice again. When our survival and human connections are not nurtured, it might be hard to imagine being generous in other ways. As Unitarian Universalists, we gather around covenant, around principles, but we also gather for a purpose. I wonder if we become extravagant, even exaggerated, in the ways we notice our body's messages, the way we look at our heavy things, and provide ourselves comfort. If we do this in equal parts to our resistance to injustices, how much of ourselves would we be willing to share for the long haul? How could we be newly brave? How could we feel less fear? Self-care and even body practices have become recently so deeply commercialized. Some buzzwords for the next mental health day or spa treatment. You've seen this, right? It's not just in where I live now in Los Angeles. It's happening elsewhere. But self-care, embodied practice, is about the getting ready. It's about the spiritual preparation for living into our covenants, for centering the experiences of those who may experience oppression, for making noise when confronted with systemic violence, with bad policy, with what's coming up on that Facebook feed. Generosity can spring from bodies that have survived, even if sometimes we feel numbed out or indifferent. Across the sorrows and joys, triumphs and lows, heavy things and light things, burdens and victories. We need comfort as we practice community, as we carry on leadership, as we make meaning together of the world around us and prepare to act. Because somewhere a line will break. A city will go black. People will dig for candles in the bottom drawer. But we will be ready. We will use our song like a match. It will fill our rooms, opening rooms of its own. So we can sing, "I did not know my house was this large." Our house felt large at that support group meeting that day, as we stayed curious with one another, as we confronted the barriers to being included, as we made meaning of the conditions we felt we had to ignore sometimes, and we got into the details of our own heavy things. You see, there's one thing I would kind of want to change about the story we read together. As she learned, she had to take apart the heavy things into smaller things, sensation by sensation, fragment by fragment. I would want her to turn to her friend and say, "Hey, would you help me break a piece off of this? And I'll be there to help you when your heavy things need to be broken apart too." We need one another. Where we have aches, wounds, and in our broken places, we long to be comforted. Let our worshiping together as a congregation of Unitarian Universalists and newcomers unfold renewed generosity. May we make meaning together of our fatigue, of our achy, creaky joints, of our scars, of our memories. May we love one another and change the hearts and minds of those who would be indifferent to the suffering of others' bodies. When we are asked to give, to be externally generous, may we feel less put upon by others in our midst so that we can share in the joy of our community. Vigil keepers of the lived body, may we be generous in accordance with our covenant because we have already become generous with ourselves. Amen.